So once again, thank you so much for inviting me here for these 4 weeks. And this is the final week of our work with the Brahma Viharas. So we will focus mainly on equanimity and the cultivation of equanimity. But I'll do a quick review for those who weren't here the first 3 weeks. The Brahma Viharas, the 4 Brahma Viharas, are sometimes called the 4 limitless ones, or in the Tibetan tradition, they like the translation, the 4 immeasurables. So the notion is that we're cultivating our hearts so that we might at some point reach the place of the heart of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the saints and sages, who experience immeasurable loving friendliness. That's metta, or maitri in the Tibetan tradition. That's the Sanskrit metta, loving kindness, loving friendliness. Karuna is compassion. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have immeasurable compassion for all beings equally. Mudita is sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. That's the joy at others' happiness. And then finally, equanimity, which is the ability to maintain balance in the face of the reality of things as they are, the suffering in the world, the difficulty and the distress. It's also equalness. So a heart that reaches out to all beings equally. It's also non-reactivity, so the ability to not be habitually reacting out of greed or aggression or self-centeredness. So that's the preciousness of upekkha, equanimity. So loving kindness, loving friendliness, we cultivate with the practice, moving in the direction of the immeasurable, but knowing that since we're definitely not there yet, we accomplish the practice of training our hearts and our minds, our thought patterns, our habits, to move in that direction. And we start with what's easy. So we use this very skillful technique of thinking of a benefactor. So it's some being that just the thought of loving kindness arises. So that's really a smart way to do it. And we spend time thinking and using those phrases, directing the loving kindness toward the easier beings so that we strengthen the ability. And then we move to the dear ones who are also easy. And then maybe other friends, not quite as easy. And then finally, we start reaching out to people we don't even know. And of course, we can also occasionally practice a little bit with the difficult people in our lives. But we don't want to take those on right away or in a way that will be daunting. Because I always compare it to weight training. You take the light weights, you work with them the most, and little by little strength develops. You take on the heavier weights when you can, when you know you can. So it's that sort of progression. And then after cultivating the strength of loving kindness as a real foundation, we then work with compassion. And we have different phrases that we use, of course, we've seen. And the first being that we think of in our training of compassion, we want it to be someone we care about a lot and who is in some difficulty or distress. Again, this is the skillful technique of choosing a being so that compassion arises easily, so we know how it feels to feel compassion. We distinguish it from pity. We distinguish it from certain kinds of distancing and so forth. And then we direct the phrases of compassion, which is the first one. The one I really like it a lot is just to say, I care. And then we can also learn, train ourselves to cultivate compassion for ourselves, to actually care about our own pain. We've often felt that we a little bit tenuous about extending compassion because we somehow think that if we have compassion, that means we're going to be able to do something about it or solve the situation for someone. But when we think about it, even in our own lives, it's just so nice to have someone just say to us that they care. They understand we're in pain and they care. We rarely are asking for someone to solve our lives, and in a lot of situations, it's not possible. But for someone to say they care. And then we reach out with the phrase of concern, and they vary depending on the situation or the person. So I invented those ones. May you be comforted, or may you be supported or cared for, or if someone is sick, may you be healed. But then the one that I think works in every situation, may you be surrounded with kindness. We had some people who had lost dear pets, and so we were directing compassion toward them and the pets, and then realizing that, well, the people, if the pet could not be found and returned, then just the thought and the feeling that this dear pet would be surrounded with kindness is a huge comfort. Wherever you wander, may you be surrounded with kindness. And so that, and in any kind of situation, with the feeling of compassion, wishing that beings be surrounded with kindness. And then appreciative joy. That's just so much fun to begin to cultivate. It's also really wonderful to think that there is a practice that can help us shift from a feeling that our friends, people we know, people we work with, if they have success, if they get the promotion that we don't get, that then we are inevitably faced with feeling jealousy or envy or a self-judgment that I'm not successful, it's not going to ever work for me. It's such a wonderful thing to realize, no, we actually have a practice that will help us cultivate the ability to feel joy at others' joy and joy at others' success. And how wonderful that is and how much more fun it is. So we're not just caught in our reaction, which is quite normal. I mean, envy, jealousy, or self-criticism. It's normal to feel that. But how wonderful that we can train ourselves in another, more fun direction. So with the joy practice, it is also acknowledged in the teachings that this is very difficult. It's loving kindness is hard, and we learn to cultivate that. Compassion can also be difficult, and we learn to cultivate that. But appreciative joy is even more difficult, just because of the way things are. So we don't have to feel that somehow we're wrong or bad or inadequate if we don't have this ability. But what's wonderful is then we can begin to cultivate it. And we begin that with a category of being that is, again, really easy and fun. So we think of many people with children or grandchildren use a child or a grandchild in that category because it's so easy for a parent to not be jealous of children or grandparents, to not be jealous of them. So, or maybe there is a dear friend that we have that is experiencing something. You know, weddings, of course, are wonderful opportunities for a celebration of appreciative joy. Birthday parties, that's what they're about, that's what they're for. Or Or if there isn't anyone like that in our lives, we, as I say, babies, puppies, kittens. They're just the feeling they evoke is this appreciative joy. And flowers, bouquets of flowers, trees blooming. So we bring to heart and mind, in order to cultivate that practice, our first being or category is someone like that. And so that we allow ourselves to feel that joy, feel the happiness of their happiness, just the pure joy, just thinking of the last baby you saw giggling in the grocery store. And just that feeling of just yahoo, you know, so that we're not having to worry about jealousy or envy or anything like that, and we can feel what it feels. And then the phrase, maybe if it's a success, may your happiness or success continue, may happiness and success continue. Or it could just be the phrase, may joy never leave you, may joy never leave you. There's even this feeling of jumping for joy. That's so uplifting. With relation to ourselves, we don't bring ourselves in with the joy practice in that way. But what we can do instead is reflect on gratitude. So if, when you want to bring yourself into the mudita practice, you think of what you're grateful for. Make lists of gratefulness. And gratefulness is connected to joy. So the more that we're aware of and take the time to actually be aware of what in our life is something that we're grateful for, that will also give rise to feelings of joy. And then we can proceed to relate that to other beings if we want to in the method of training. This, again, you, most of you know this, but if you really want to take this up as a specific ongoing practice, the book that you'd want to get would be Sharon Salzberg's book called Loving Kindness, because she goes through the techniques chapter by chapter of all four of the Brahmaviharas. There are other books and other resources and so forth, and certainly even on the net you can find some nice articles. But if you want a program that's just set out, then that would be the resource and that would be the book. So then we go through all of those. We spend more time with the easy categories. We spend more time with loving kindness and compassion. We approach appreciative joy and again, in the area of what's easy, so we get the feel of it. Then finally, the fourth Brahma Vihara, the fourth quality is equanimity, upeka in Pali. So to give you the feeling of it first, there's a wonderful verse by another famous Dzogchen master who's no longer alive that really gives the feeling. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural great peace. So that's the feeling of equanimity. It's this wonderful feeling of being able to rest. Rest at balance, in balance. And we do cultivate it in both kinds of practices. Our mindfulness practice techniques, whatever techniques we use, a big part of them is coming awake with mindfulness when we're caught in our story. That wonderful verse in Zen, caught in a self-centered dream, only suffering. So it's going on, the story of me, you know, and we're each starring in our own. And then in our mindfulness practice, whatever technique we're using, we come awake. And oh the story is so often reactive. We're reacting to something. We're reacting with desire. We're reacting with aversion. We're reacting with greed. We're acting with hatred. We're acting with total confusion. Or we're just spinning the story of me and my life. This is who I am. This is what I think. This is how I feel. This is what I did today. Just on and on and on. So we come awake in that, and we let it go, and we come to awareness itself, or to our breath sensations, the body sensations, the oasis of this present moment, without that reactivity. That's equanimity. That's the moment of equanimity. So certainly, our mindfulness practice continually helps us to strengthen equanimity. And then we also train, we can train with the Brahma-viharas, with this last category, equanimity verse and equanimity phrases and equanimity practice. But this comes with a real caution label. And I think of my friend's grandson, he's 3 years old, and he's got this thing, say, danger, danger. Danger, danger. This kind of thing about danger. He's learning about danger in the world. So danger, danger. So the caution here is that equanimity as a practice needs to be on a foundation of strong loving kindness, strong compassion, and also some ability to experience appreciative joy. Because equanimity, as you noticed in the guided meditation, is about being able to accept things as they are. Things are as they are. And further, even to have that reflection that all beings are the owners of their own karma. Their happiness or unhappiness actually depends on their actions, not on my wishes. So you can see how without strong compassion, strong loving kindness, and some appreciative joy, the near enemy of this is various kinds of indifference, right? So it could easily be an excuse for not caring. So it actually, it's based on already having opened our heart in loving kindness. Really, what one of my teachers stretched our love so that it includes so many more beings than just the ones in our closest circle. And it depends also that we have stretched our hearts and our compassion into caring. And also been able to experience joy at others' joy, particularly not because it's just so much fun, but also when you see in yourself that you see the experience of being able to experience joy at others' success, then you understand that you've really made some progress letting go of that our self-centered habit. Our habitual tendency to think of ourselves, which is so strongly in there that we will even think of ourselves in suffering kinds of ways. We will, when someone else has success, we'll think, oh, you know, that should have been me, I'm just not good at anything, and so forth. So a lot of unpleasant thoughts, and we think, well, why would we choose unpleasant thoughts, you know? Well, it's because it solidifies, it reinforces the self. So the self habit is so strong that it's even willing to suffer just to be there, as opposed to not being there. But appreciative joy, just there's no self involved. You know, someone says, hey, I got that award, or I got the raise, and we just say, wow, hooray, that's great. So we see that the self didn't get in there at all. We just gave them the gold and celebrate that with them. So then equanimity, instead of being a kind of indifference where we're not engaging, is the ability to maintain balance given how much we care, how much loving kindness we are feeling, how much compassion we have, because even we can do lots of practice, caring, loving, compassion, and so forth for others, still their lives may not be working out in the way that we had hoped. And once again, it can be, again, our self-centered habit. We can think of, well, gee, you know, I've just been spending all of this time sending them loving kindness and compassion, and they're just not pulling their life together. So then our practice becomes some way, once again, it's like grabbed by the self, by the ego, by the little ego, and somehow used against them. Or I've been sending loving kindness to myself and my life is still messed up. So we use it against ourselves too. So equanimity is the ability to, it's a broad sense of understanding and wisdom, expansive sense of realizing the world is complicated. A lot of stuff happens to everybody all the time. And so instead of closing our hearts, we have the equanimity to help us remain open but also maintain balance. Because of course, I mean, I was joking about that kind of impatience. But another thing that can happen is just we can fall into grief and depression. We open our hearts in love and compassion for dear ones in our lives, for the situation in the world, and then it just keeps happening, you know, every month another war, every month a new disease, you know, just so much distress. And because we have such access now to worldwide communication, we hear about it continually. So understandably, a lot of our lives we may have closed off the heart of compassion and caring, just to kind of feel like we could keep breathing, you know, keep going through our lives. But now we can realize that there is this practice of equanimity that will back us up, kind of, so that we open our hearts a little more, but then with our caring and concern, we can also be aware that in fact things are as they are. So we don't have to freak out, basically. We can come back to balance and say, I will care, I will do what I can, I will give when I can, I will send the loving kindness and the compassion and so forth. And yet I also know that things are as they are. And particularly also that people make choices, other people make choices, and what happens is often a result of those choices. And so then, we still send them loving kindness and have that feeling. Equanimity allows us to, and it, again, it's very much like people who are parents will know that quite often there's this sense of whatever these beings do, they are my children, I will love them forever. And so too with equanimity, to me there's this feeling of sending out loving kindness and compassion until the end of time, regardless of what happens. Just regardless of what happens. Or I think mentioned a couple years ago this other example. Oh, can you remind me of the person who, is it John Seed, is that his name? Environmental activist, runs workshops and so forth, has, got the name wrong. Anyway, someone asked him it's been decades, you know, and he keeps doing the workshops and writing and so forth, and someone asked how he can just maintain his optimism and keep working for these issues and so forth. And he said, He said, well, he grew up watching cowboy TV movies in the 50s, and there is this moment in those old black and white movies where something happens and there's a cattle stampede, right? And then the camera shows you that all of these cattle, you know, thousands of cattle are heading just nonstop toward the cliff, right? And then the cowboys jump on their horses and they head toward it as well. And the idea is, of course, that they will get to the head of the herd in time to the, and then all the cowboys will turn the herd and no, it won't go over the cliff. In the movies, they don't, they do it, you know, our heroes succeed. In real life, apparently, there was the other option, which is that if they don't succeed, then the cowboys know they are also going too fast to stop, right? So everybody's going over the cliff. So he said that that was sort of, because those were his heroes when he was young, that was sort of his attitude, that we all just must get going and run like crazy, and we might all just go over the cliff. But who knows, we might make it in time to cut the herd and keep it over the cliff, right? But that was his attitude, and that was his feeling. So that's a little bit an interesting kind of exciting view of equanimity. No, we're just going to do it regardless. So that sense of being able to maintain our balance, our good humor, our equanimity, given the situation in the world, given also that we're actually not in control of anything. I wanted to read again this verse from the chant from Amaravati, the suffusion with the divine abidings. I read this for you last week, and now at the end you'll see more vividly the equanimity lines. But we'll start with the beginning. If I could chant, I would, but I'm not so good at it. They chant it beautifully when you go on retreats with the Amaravati monks or nuns. You can ask them to chant the suffusion with divine abidings. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such acts, they will be the heirs. So those last lines tell us that action with intention bears fruit, and the results of those actions are what we inherit as heirs. So if we act with intention, we inherit the results of those actions. Other people, they act with intention, be they skillful or harmful, they will inherit the results of those actions. So to know that is the wisdom aspect of equanimity, upeka, equanimity. And then to be able to be calm in the face of that reality, still maintaining balance before we fall into one extreme or the other. Equanimity also helps us before falling into extremes. Again, you can see the state of my mind, the examples that I think I would give you. Remember those toys that you get and they bounce back? They blow up, you know, again, I had them in the 50s. So you hit them and they bounce right back. So I think of equanimity sometimes is that just that ability to come back, you know, come back. Because you're not going to get out of this life without getting tossed over. I mean, that's just the way it is. But equanimity, we come back. We're able, before we fall over into one extreme or another, to return to balance. There's also a tremendous patience that comes with equanimity, and equanimity strengthens patience. It also, we cultivate it every time, even with the loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy practice, and in our dedication of merit, when we think of all beings equally, that also is a part of the energy of equanimity. So it's the word sometimes is used is dispassion, but again, not in a cold sense, but in the sense of not passionate reactivity. It's the letting go of drama and melodrama. Not quite needing to go that far with things. It also helps, it'll help kind of balance and tone the other brahmaviharas. So that's quite wonderful as well. It has that quality. It also helps us understand and be okay with the reality that we can't control things. Understanding the wisdom that actually there's if things get out of control, it's not our fault. It's not a problem. It's not that we should have been able to control things more. It's the understanding that they never were in control. If we thought they were, that was just an illusion. So often we feel somehow responsible if things get out of control. Or, you know, it's so difficult in our culture. We seem to feel blamed or blaming, even if we get sick, as though somehow we should have been able to prevent that. But, you know, we've never had control of any of that. We may have had the illusion of it, but our practice, the Buddhist teachings, also our mindfulness practice, begin to help us understand that really there never has been any control. And so it's not our fault or our responsibility. We're all doing the best we can. To be able to accept that with a sense of balance, a sense of calm. So it's not that sense that in order to feel at peace, we must fix everything and fix ourselves, and down along the way somehow, you know, we'll pull it all together. So those of you who are young, those of us with gray hair, we were young once. We had that thought that down along the way we would pull it all together, but actually what happened was this. And then it was down along the way vanished and became to, I'm already old. You know? So it's okay. You know, it's absolutely okay. That's the way of things. It's just the way of things. Things aren't pulled together and they don't ever really get pulled together. And the equanimity allows us to have, there's some grace, you know, some ease of well-being. A sense of poise, it's a balance with the things as they are. just loving the world as it is, caring for the suffering of the world as it is. And actually, it's not that one then stops acting. With that kind of balance, one can be actually quite a bit more effective in one's chosen area of wanting to do work to help the world. It allows, again, this returning the balance from reactivity that can allow us to be able to speak or to write or to do what we do for the suffering in the world with a lot more energy, certainly. We get less exhausted with it. There's this, again, this sense of patience and this willingness to just keep riding, however long it takes. It also is said to strengthen flexibility in the mind, interestingly enough, equanimity. And also strengthens courage. So it's this beautiful non-reactivity. And that's again why I love that lovely verse. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding wave in the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace. Just the peace of returning to this moment, the oasis from wherever the chaos, the waves and the neurotic thoughts have taken us. We can return to the oasis of this moment, mindfulness, this breath, these body sensations, and rest there for a moment. Just taking a break with balance and ease. So we might say also that it's peace. Equanimity is the experience of being at peace. I wanted to read to you a couple of verses, the first couple of verses from the Sing Sing Ming, which is sometimes called the Verses on the Faith Mind, and it's a Zen teaching from the third Zen ancestor, or the sixth Zen ancestor. There's a couple of verses that are similar, so the more you look into it, the less it's clear who wrote these when. But in any case, they're wonderful. It's a long group of verses, but these are the first two verses, and they really capture the feeling of equanimity and the letting go of preference and the returning to balance. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When this deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way is perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things, nor in the inner feelings of emptiness. be serene in the oneness of things, and such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. When you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. As long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will never know oneness. Just say the first few of the lines again. I'm going to change a word. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When greed and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Or we could say when passion and hate, lust and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. It also sounds a lot like the Tao Te Ching, doesn't it? So I'll give you a couple of those. Look and it can't be seen. Listen and it can't be heard. Reach and it can't be grasped. Above it isn't bright. Below it isn't dark. Seamless, unnameable, it returns to the realm of nothing. Form that includes all forms. Image without an image. Subtle beyond all conception. Approach it, and there is no beginning. Follow it, and there is no end. You can't know it, but you can be it, at ease in your own life. Just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom. And another Tao Te Ching verse. When people see some things as beautiful, other things become ugly. When people see some things as good, other things become bad. Being and non-being create each other. Difficult and easy support each other. Long and short define each other. High and low depend on each other. Before and after follow each other. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything. Things arise and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. She has but doesn't possess, acts but doesn't expect. When her work is done, she forgets it. That's why it lasts forever. So these verses give us the feeling, the sense of equanimity, balance, equalness, at peace with the way things are, at ease in our own life, the chaos of our own life. I want to then finally leave you with this fun verse from the teaching of the Buddha. Again, we talk about equalness with equanimity as well, and with the loving kindness and the compassion and the sympathetic joy, we we're directing our loving kindness to all beings everywhere. So as I mentioned, I think here in the first week, the Buddha gave this wonderful teaching to direct loving kindness to beings according to the number of legs they have or don't have. And this was because the monastics were in a given, well, there's different stories. Of course, there's always different versions, but that they were, there was fear of snakes in the forest that they were in, or maybe a monk had died being bitten by a snake. Anyway, there was the arising of a lot of fear of snakes in the situation. So the Buddha took the opportunity to give the teaching, because loving kindness, of course, and all of these Brahma Viharas are a strong, strong antidote to the fears that we might have. So I wanted to read you, for our feeling of ending here, the teaching, directing loving kindness to all beings according to the number of legs they have or don't have. For those without feet, I have love. I have love for all with 2 feet. For those with 4 feet, I have love. I have love for all with many feet. May those without feet do me no harm. May none with 2 feet do me harm. May those with 4 feet do me no harm. May none with many feet do me harm. May all beings, all living things, all who come to be, one and all, may they see every blessing. May no evil at all come to them. Without limit is the Buddha. Without limit is the Dhamma. Without limit is the Sangha.